How do you price an ad on your channel? That's probably the most common question we get from other creators. And it was the biggest question we had when we first started on YouTube. So we're hosting a live workshop on how to price yourself. This is everything that we've learned in the past 13 years of being on YouTube and our simple three-step process that'll help you develop concrete pricing. So if you want to join us for this live session, just go to colinandsamir.com/live. Enter your email and you'll get all the information about our live event on May 9th. All right, hope you enjoy this episode of The Colin and Samir Show. Hi, Elle.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Elle Mills. Nice to meet you.
I went into YouTube wanting to be different.
Every once in a while, there's a unicorn.
Wanting to do something that no one else has done before.
This is really cool. Being a YouTuber is a dream come true. This is all I ever wanted. And why the fuck am I so fucking unhappy? It doesn't make any fucking sense. You know what I mean?
Hi, Elle.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
What have you been up to?
I mean, a few months ago, started a podcast. So I've been doing that weekly. I just got a Twitch deal. So started streaming yesterday, actually.
Oh, wow.
So got that for the whole year. Well, I'm going to do longer than a year, but for sure a year. And then in 2 weeks, going to be shooting my first short film. My directorial debut, I guess. That's what some of the producers have been saying. I kind of like the ring of it. Yeah. It's been interesting, honestly, because I've only done YouTube for the past couple of years and trying out new things. It's been fun to get the creative juices going in a new way.
Even as you're talking about what you're up to right now, I consider what you were doing on YouTube to be short films.
I feel like that became more apparent over time and people started calling that out, because I think it just kind of was something I didn't think about. I didn't consciously go, I'm going to make short film videos. When I first started doing YouTube, used to make trailer edits, movie trailer edits. And then I'd started doing comedy videos. And then the conscious decision was to kind of combine that. I had definitely put my love for film into my videos.
What inspired you to get into video making?
I was a little bit of a loser. A loser that was kind of friends with everyone. I was president of my school. I was valedictorian.
Oh, wow.
I was huge into clubs. I loved my high school was my shit. But outside of high school, I was editing Glee fan videos. I was always making videos since I was, I think, fifth grade. That was when I pulled up Windows Movie Maker for the first time.
That was the first editing software I used too.
Yeah. And then I think eighth grade, my dad got me a laptop, a MacBook. So I started using iMovie and then quickly went to Final Cut. But yeah, I've always kind of been the kid who was making videos for the school. I always I would get paid to do my friend's video projects. So yeah.
Was there either a filmmaker, a film, or a YouTube creator that served as inspiration to you as a filmmaker?
Oh yeah, Ferris Bueller.
Nice.
Yeah. I always say, I remember watching that. I think I watched the first time in eighth grade because I was doing comedy videos and I was not happy. I didn't feel creatively fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And so I was okay, what can I do to make myself feel better, I guess. And so I was I love how Ferris Bueller breaks that fourth wall. In a way, it was kind of doing the YouTube thing. And so, yeah, I was a huge YouTube fan, but I also did love movies and films. But yeah. I did take huge inspiration from Casey, but his vlogging stuff.
Early stuff.
His early stuff. I remember specifically thinking, I really want to kind of take that and kind of mesh it with, what people are doing on YouTube, which is telling my story and getting personal.
So when do you go from making Glee videos or genre swap trailers to making videos about yourself?
Well, I always wanted to be in front of the camera. It was just that video did really well. And so I started doing the trailers. Mm-hmm. And then I got to a point where I was I don't want to do this. I don't want to be known for this. I want to be in front of the camera. And so that's when I pivoted. And I started, I think for the first 3 months I was doing it, I pivoted and started doing me in front of the camera. It wasn't doing well. And then one video picked up on Twitter. It was the interviewing my friend's Tinder date. So I got my friend to swipe on Tinder and I went on, we met up with three of the guys and I just interviewed them and it did really well. And
that's a pretty gutsy video.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then it started the era of doing crazy stuff for YouTube videos. One of them being getting legally married.
I remember that.
Tattoos. Mm-hmm, yeah. I got tattoos. I was just, people always ask me about my tattoos and I'm like, yeah, this is like, I don't know. I refer to my tattoos as like a phase of like the teenager phase of my life and the YouTube phase of my life, I guess.
Yeah. Did Casey shout you out? At what point did he shout you out?
End of the year. It was like around my coming out video. So like November, December of 2017.
Before we get to the Casey shout out, like you start making these videos that are more centered around your experience now, right? Like this Tinder date videos, like your friends. And like, did you start gaining fandom and a community through those videos? What were you learning during that time of the, from let's say 0 to 100,000 subs?
Oh gosh, it's so, I haven't thought back to that, but it was just like, I guess for me, I remember grinding. Like it was like consistency. Cause I remember hearing when I was like, cause I was a huge YouTube fan growing up and I feel like the advice I always heard was consistency is key. And I agree with that. And so I think for me, it was just like pumping out content and just like not missing a day.
You were uploading daily?
No, I was uploading, I think at the beginning of the year, it was 3 times a week. And then I got down to 2 times a week. And then once I switched over, cause the kind of like videos up what I was doing until I hit 100,000 around there were more like short form comedy, like not what I kind of do now. Mm-hmm. And once I switched over to that, it was once a week.
And once you got into that, like once a week flow, how did you craft that style? Cause I feel like at that point you had this style that actually is very Ferris Bueller where it's like, you know, hey, I'm L Mills, right?
Yes.
And it's like, boom, there's the main character. And then you're bringing us through like an act one of this story. And then like an incredible act two of transformation. Like you had it, this style that was so specific. Mm-hmm. How did you land on that style?
There's literally an unlisted video where I published it and I was like talking about before I made that first video of like that Ferris Bueller style. I was like, I'm going to be doing something different. I want to step it up. I think you guys are going to really like it, you know? And I really like consciously made that decision to switch over.
That's the classic YouTuber update video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is always generally better if you don't put it out.
Yeah.
You just go ahead and do whatever you said you were going to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, in our early days, we have like 4 update videos that were like twists and turns of like, hey guys, now the channel's going to be like this. And
all the titles are like, hey, it's us.
Yeah.
Hey, we're back.
Hey, us again.
Where this channel's headed. Yeah. It's a dark time in a YouTuber journey. Those update videos. So did you feel pressure about consistency at this time? Or was it so early days that you were just like, this is fun?
I think near like once it started getting to those videos, cause they're so, they really do take a lot out of me.
Yeah.
That's when the consistency started to decrease and it was hard to keep it up. Because I think a big thing about it was I wasn't making money on YouTube at the time. Right. I was really, well, I was making a little bit, but because I used copyrighted music, I was just like spending way more than I was making. But I was like, to me, I was just like, I don't know. I'm very like, it's an investment. So and I think it worked
and
out.
And it was.
Yeah, it worked out.
So how were you spending more than you were making? Like, did you have another job or were you just?
No. I honestly don't know. Okay. I will say like a year and a half ago, have a business manager now.
Nice. Congrats.
Jared. He's the best.
Shout out to Jared. Yeah.
Jared keeps me in check.
Okay. Gives you a sense of calm.
Yes. Yeah. And honestly, it's been so, so great to have him because I'm very impulsive. So I think, I guess I just made it work. I definitely was, there's brand deals, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a bit of AdSense money because the videos up until I switched over didn't have copyrighted music. So there was like old videos I was still monetizing off of.
And how were you brokering those brand deals? They were just emailing you and you would.
I got a manager at 100K. So mid 2017 to before I was doing those videos. Yeah.
Got it. Cool.
Was it a manager from like a bigger agency or?
He was at Full Screen.
Full Screen.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get to this point, but I remember Full Screen put out a statement on your behalf at one point about your tour.
Yes. That's right.
We'll get there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So now you're making these videos there. You've obviously changed kind of YouTube in this way of developing this like 80s movie format on YouTube where you're the main character, you're breaking the fourth wall. It's so unique to the point where arguably the biggest creator on the platform at the time, Casey Neistat, basically dedicates a video to you.
Yeah.
And I remember you had around 750,000 subs at this time. And, you know, I was an avid fan of Casey, watched the vlog every day. And he had, I think, so much influence that the amount of people that probably went over to you that day. So can you take us through that experience?
Yeah.
Like, that day of being like, whoa, did Casey Neistat just shout me
out?
Oh
yeah. I mean, I do remember, cause I have subscribed to him, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw his video on my subscription page and I saw my link.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck? Cause this is also right after my coming out video. And that video, it was just chaotic because that's my biggest video.
Right.
And it blew up and there were like celebrities tweeting about it. So I was already in like a very like, what is going on part of my life. And I remember seeing that. I have a video of it. I don't know where it is, but I freaked. I was screaming. I was like, I literally drew inspiration from him. And he did what my intention with YouTube was, which was doing something that no one has ever done before. And he did that. And so to have him spend half a video talking so highly about me, it was surreal. It was insane. And you bringing it back up, like, I'm like, I still am very like, grateful for that, because he didn't have to do that at all. I just remember being freaking out. I think I was calling my friends and stuff, but yeah, it's because then shortly after he had like that Samsung video, you know, the Winter Wonderland, and he like flew me out. And I remember meeting him for the first time. He came out and he came up to me and I was just like, whoa, this is so trippy. Like, I was just like, this ain't real. It's so surreal.
Did you feel when you met him that you knew him? Like that you had a relationship with him? Or what? How did you feel?
I was intimidated.
Yeah.
He's an intimidating guy in general.
Yeah.
But I was intimidated. I mean, he was just so kind. I felt like, and I think he, because of what he had said about me, I felt very, I don't know. I feel like I was probably a little awkward and shy around him, but he was so nice.
Yeah. So this pocket of time is like essentially a slingshot for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a rocket ship. And you mentioned that prior to the Casey shout out, you also came out on YouTube.
Yes.
Can you talk through that experience and even the decision to turn something so personal into, you know, a YouTube video and share it with the community?
Looking back, like, I was very impulsive and very like open book on YouTube specifically. I felt like it was like my therapy, like a way for me to, it was my journal, basically. I think I only had come to realization that I, like, at the time, because I came out recently as gay, but back then I came to the decision, I was like, okay, I feel like I'm bi, 2 weeks before I posted the video. And so it was very fast, very impulsive. I didn't tell any of my friends and family. I think my sister found out through a friend, because that the video went out, and she was actually really upset about that. So I think about that period of time as like, I'm happy that everything happened, but I think I was using YouTube as a way to communicate my feelings and my thoughts to even my family and friends.
Wow.
Which was, to have that so publicly too, like not have my dad or my mom know what's going on, but have to find out through a YouTube video. I guess that's something I look back on and I think, you know, I've learned from that. And like, I have my boundaries set. I was talking about this with, I think, Bethany Moda. I feel like I'm going on a tangent, but during that time, having my vulnerability be so closely associated to success, like all my biggest videos were when I was like being super open and vulnerable. It was, I think, very confusing in my head, because I think I then was like, I have to be so open and blunt. That's like the biggest lesson I've learned from that time, is just like setting those boundaries, because, you know, not everyone deserves your vulnerability.
I think vulnerability as content gets really confusing when it's your career, because then the videos are your product. And then if your vulnerability is tied into that product, I can see how that gets really confusing.
There was a wave of vulnerability on YouTube, I feel like, during that time too, where you could see it from like creator to creator to creator. And I think it probably had to do with the fact that a lot of creators were getting a little bit burnt out or having realizations about themselves. But I remember thinking like the platform right now is full of vulnerability.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that very well. I think you were at the forefront of that movement of, I think in a lot of ways, it being super positive to be, hey, let's be more transparent. Let's open up. Let's have these conversations. I imagine your coming out video, first of all, it is such a beautifully crafted video. And I watched it again last night and it gave me chills again. Like, I've seen that video so many times. Mm-hmm. First of all, from a filmmaking perspective, one of the most brilliant parts of that video is when you ask people to draw your crush.
Yeah.
That is such a incredible moment, and it's so complex on so many levels. And then seeing their reactions is just like incredible.
Mm-hmm. From a connection standpoint, it is interesting because in that moment, as a audience member, I am actually more connected to you than the people sitting in front of the camera.
Because I know something they don't know. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
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 it's an incredible, incredibly well-crafted video. I wonder if like, did you feel more confident articulating these things in video than face-to-face?
Oh, absolutely.
Someone?
Yeah. I think, as you can see, I stutter over my words a lot. Yeah. I feel like I'm an anxious person, and I don't, especially when it comes to the people I love most, it's hard. Vulnerability is very, very hard for me. And so it was a little bit of a cheat because I'm being vulnerable with a camera and I don't have to, you know, do it in person. It's less anxiety inducing.
How soon after the coming out video did you have mixed feelings about that video?
I think a few months after, because again, I had only really came into terms with my sexuality 2 weeks before. But then it became my biggest video and I was being put on like the magazine of LGBTQ magazines. Like I was being asked all these questions and I think I became the face of something that I hadn't really figured out on my own. I didn't have time to process it. And so I think that really messed with my mental health. And I only recently this past few months have like come out as gay. And so like, only in the past year or two, I've really been coming to terms with sexuality, and that video came out 2017. Mm-hmm. So
2 weeks prior, kind of exploring that part of yourself, did it flow into the pressure of consistency where you were like, "Ooh, well, I'm having this thought, and that would make for a good video, and I need an idea."
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Yeah,
which is interesting because I was like 19 at the time, so you know, definitely. I think again, I was very impulsive.
I think that's a really interesting challenge with creators, where you do have to productize your and process, build a process around making videos on a consistent basis. And ideas are one of the hardest things to come by, but obviously that was your personal experience. And I think you did articulate that moment in time very well. And even are talking about it now, reflecting on it, I think having these conversations is really important because I think however complex that video is in your world, I'd imagine the 5 million people who have watched it, there are so many people in that audience that video changed their life. Mm-hmm. And I think that impact is something I would assume you've also felt. Like, have you had outreach from people or?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Again, at the time, like when it was, really big, I don't think I was able to process that. But now, like as time goes on and as I get older, I think I'm now realizing how the impact that has and how important that video was, you know, because I've definitely had my phases with it, as everyone I think would, of like resenting it. But I feel like I'm like, I don't know, I've come through and I can ever fully process how the impact it's had. But, you know, for the most part, I get it. But It's hard to really like think about how, like, cause that video, it is my biggest video and, you know, I've had people say it to me, but it's hard to process it when people say like, this video changed my life. You know, you can't ever really understand that. You can try, but.
And at the time as a creator, you're in the middle of the cycle.
Yeah.
Right. Like that video comes about partly because of the system that you're in with YouTube, where you need to make another video in 2 weeks and then you have to make another one right after that.
Yeah.
And you're in that period where it's super exciting right when you release the video, but then you switch and you're like, okay, next video.
Yes.
Right.
No.
Even though that was such a personal and impactful thing to your life, as a creator, you're like, switch.
No, yeah. And the video following up after that actually like caused like in my personal life a lot of, because I was like, I had that thought. I was like, shit. It was so weird because I was like, I have to top my coming out video. Like, it's like so weird. Right. It's like a weird concept.
Yeah, you've set a new bar.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like having like Casey Neistat make a video, I was like, shit, he's watching now. Like I was like, and like all these people I look up to are watching and I'm like, shit, like what can the next video be? What can the next video be? And so like definitely push myself.
I actually think the pressure of having a really big video is immense. It's immense. Anytime we've had a video that pops, like all I can think about is all these people came. If we don't follow it up with a good video, they're all going to leave.
Yeah.
And that's incredible pressure. And I think one thing I'm really grateful for is that we've been doing this for 10 years and only now are we starting to get into like who we are on the platform. And I think now after 10 years, our maturity level and our emotional maturity level is such that this stuff impacts us less and we can look at this career a little differently. Mm-hmm. But I want to understand like deeper what that moment was like, coming out video, Casey Neistat shout out. What was the next video and how was your mental state at this time? Was it like, wow, I'm doing it, I'm making it? Or was it more than that?
I think it was shit's happening. But definitely this was like the beginning of that like burnout part of my life. The intense, like the peak of it. The video I followed up with it after I got legally married to my sister's boyfriend as a prank. And I didn't tell my family, didn't tell my sister. We went to Vegas, got married, came back. I didn't realize how much it meant to my family, I guess. And so my mom actually said I wasn't allowed to post the video. Because it actually, like, everyone started crying. It was like, I was like, oh shit, this went bad. And so she really was like, how far are you going to go for YouTube? Eventually, we kind of worked it out. And I was able to release the video. Like, I had to, like, really talk about how stupid it was. And just, like, you know, edit around it. I don't even remember the videos after that. I just do remember, like, that was, like, from there on out, it became not fun. I did feel immense pressure because it was just all happening so fast. And I feel like there was a lot of pressure on like the editing, the storytelling, the ideas and how big the ideas were. And I was doing it all on my own. There was no team, you know? So like it felt very personal if a video didn't do well and stuff. So yeah, and it got to a point where I was just afraid of posting videos because I'm like, oh shit, what if this doesn't hit a million views? And then it just, you know, spiraled and life got hectic and stuff. So
yeah, that is the incredible challenge of this career, especially when you're a solo creator whose content is a very personal, whose style is very personal. You can't really build a team around that. Like, I think someone else might say, be like, oh, just get an editor. But like, I can also understand from being a creator myself that like the types of videos you're making, it's very hard to just have someone dive into your raw footage and know what to do with it.
Yes.
Like it's a personal experience. And I can totally see how that's hard to scale.
It's crazy because you bring that up. I remember at that time, a lot of people were like, get an editor. And like, would you offload the editing? I'm like, I don't like
that. Editor is like saying like, all right, I'll just chop off my arm and my brain and like give it to someone else. Like, literally. What do you mean? Like, we're attached. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, this is one thing.
Exactly. And I feel like the success of my videos was the editing too. So just like, it didn't make sense. So.
And I think that, that accelerated growth, cause that was all within a year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember it was like a movie watching you rise because you won YouTuber of the Year, right?
Yeah.
You were on magazines. First of all, those magazine shoots were so cool. And I was just like, when is this going to happen to us?
Yeah.
And it was just so cool. You were the creator that came from, you know, obscurity and just was skyrocketed into success. And I think probably what a lot of creators who experience that as well don't realize is like the scale you're at is like a big media company. Like you're reaching a million plus people with a new video, but that means your library is reaching millions of people, right? So you're the scale of a media company or a television show, but you're sitting in your bed and editing.
Yeah.
And so the pressure is equivalent to running a media company. You're reaching that many people. Mm-hmm. You have brand partnerships. Yes. You have a manager. You have people who are depending on you and
you're on tour. You're going from event to event.
Yep. Meet and greets.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you are changing lives, which is amazing, but also a very strange relationship to have with people who care so much about your work and it impacts their life so much. So how did this now go from this rise and like this experience of like, holy shit, I'm making it, which I think the equivalent of this moment in time is like, have you seen the movie That Thing You Do?
No.
Oh, you would love that movie.
Yeah?
Oh, you would love that movie. Yeah. So I grew up playing music and my dream was always like to be in a band and go on tour. And the moment that I always looked at was like the moment bands first heard their song on the radio where they're like freaking out. There's a moment in that movie, That Thing You Do, where they're just like, they hear it on the radio and like, it is just, they're so full of amazement and just like, holy shit, we're doing it. Like it's happening. Mm-hmm. And I'd imagine that moment is
what
that was for you, right? It's like a band hearing their song on the radio. You're like, I'm making it.
Uh-huh.
So during that time of even like winning the Shorty Award and doing the magazine shoots, were you starting to feel like question if this is what you actually wanted? Like, was it everything you dreamed?
I remember really early on, I'd say like the first like YouTube event I went to which was like, I think prior to the coming out video, that's when I really felt like, oh my God. Like I was going up to every creator. I was like, oh my God, can I get a photo? Like I was like, yeah. I can't believe I'm back here. I'm like, it felt so fun and surreal. But then when it got to that point, I fell into a depression and I started, my anxiety got really worse. And I think I had my first panic attack on tour. I think now looking back, it's like, I was just burnt out and everything was happening so fast. I didn't have time to process anything. You know, there's that pressure of keeping up the content. And I felt like it was all, I felt very much like this isn't going to last. That's how I felt during that entire period. Even though like, I didn't feel like I could enjoy it because I was like, I have to keep it up to, this is all going to fall apart. So I feel like that's what I was feeling around the time. And, you know, I was having really dark thoughts. I was alone a lot. I was living with my mom, but I was home. I remember like traveling so much. Like I was barely home and I was alone in hotel rooms a lot. And I feel like I remember even for like, I think 2 years after like kind of 2018, hotel rooms would be kind of triggering to me. Like I get very anxious in hotel rooms, especially when I'm alone. It was better with other people there, but just kind of reminded me of like being alone with my thoughts and feeling this intense, like, because again, like I was a huge YouTube fan growing up. So I've said this a lot, but like, I think a big part of it was that it meant so much to me. This was like my dream and I got it. And I'm like, shit, if I fuck up, it's all over. And then what? But yeah, it got to a point where I broke down and I had a very public breakdown because I started drinking a lot. And I was kind of drinking my problems away at that age, which is...
Sorry.
Why don't we just wrap up?
That's it. It's over.
It's over. L's in the most personal part of this story, Chris.
But yeah, I mean, I was just... I feel like everyone has, not everyone has, well, it was very public.
Everyone has seen it all.
Yeah.
You could say that. So you had talked about, so the video you made about burnout, I think it's called Burnt Out at 19.
Yes.
Colin and I got to see that before it was posted to YouTube at Bufferfest.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And we went to Bufferfest primarily because we were incredibly lost. We had some success on YouTube and we wanted to try something different. So we started this channel, Colin and Smear, and we had years of not making any money, feeling confused, not being able to find our footing on YouTube. And we were in a moment where we were really burnt out. And I don't think we knew that, but we were in a bad place. Mm-hmm. And we went to Bufferfest just to like get some inspiration. And I think we have a video recording of us like starting to watch your video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were like trying to, we were like, maybe we'll make a video about going to Bufferfest.
Like, so in the cycle, you know, of being burnt down, but being like, we're going to Bufferfest. Let's just film that. Like, and I think we have a story here.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, we're burnt out and we need a moment to step away. But that moment to step away will be a video about stepping away
or something.
Like, yeah.
And we sat down to watch it and I'll never forget the emotion I felt watching that video. And specifically, there's a moment where it's just a dark room and there's a laptop on a bed and you hear your audio and the bed's kind of messy. And it struck, I think, both of us in a way that was so intense that it actually, I think, is what helped the transformation for us of where we are today. Was that video.
It definitely wasn't immediate, but it was the start.
And I think it was the start. Yeah.
You know, for me, I spent the majority of my 20s living by myself out here. And I'm also the primary editor. And at the time was doing so much of the editing and seeing that laptop on the bed just resonated with me so much. And like pretty much just made me immediately start to cry. So I was like, oh man, like I hate that feeling actually of being like distraught alone on my bed. My room is a mess.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get some creative project together.
Mm-hmm.
It just hit me really hard. And after that, we actually decided to take a serious break. Mm-hmm. And I went home for 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks at the time. Yeah.
I mean, we just decided like we have to stop.
Like
right
whatever
now.
We're doing is not as important.
Yeah.
Like clearly immediately it's not as important from the second we walk out of this door, whatever we were doing before, it's just like,
Actually a sense of relief when we walked out of Bufferfest. We took a photo with you there. I don't know if you remember this. Okay. But I want to hear about the decision to make that video and what the process was like of making mm-hmm. that video.
I had committed to Buffer. And so I had that lined up and everything happened. And I did take, I think I took like a 3-week break mm-hmm. after that breakdown. And I went to London, as you see the video. Yeah. And there, because a lot of my friends there were going to Buffer LA. We were kind of thinking, I'm like, should I make a video? Should I not? And I was like, I feel like I eventually I have to talk about it. Because mm-hmm. it was so, I really made a scene about it online. And so I was like, I had to, you know, do what I do best and explain myself and through video. Basically, I left my hometown because it was really hard on my family. And I feel like I was felt very smothered. And I get it because I obviously like was not well. And I flew out to London to get away from it and to like immerse myself with people who get it. And so after a couple of days, I felt like I was ready to talk about it. During that trip, as that laptop, like I had sent that audio note to my friend, and there were like little things like that. I was like, okay, I think I have some stuff here to really explain myself, explain my story. And there's no happy ending to this, because usually my videos have, there's like a happy ending. And so I remember ending it off with like, once I realized, I was like, I can tell this story and be like, I still don't know. I'm figuring it out. That's when I decided, okay, I'm going to make this. And it was definitely, looking back, a lot to premiere that video in a theater full of people. Yeah. Very vulnerable. I remember having a bit of a panic attack before it came out, it premiered. And I remember holding on to my friend's hands. It was just super surreal, because also I got a standing ovation.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. It was just it's just such a weird concept. Everything that you saw in that video happened a week prior to that premiere. So it was all so fresh. Mm-hmm. Again, back to the impulsive thing, you know? Like, I was still so in it. And it was just very surreal, but I'm very happy, obviously. Like, there's so much, I feel like, good that came from talking about it so openly.
Yeah.
And kind of the domino effect from that.
And what were the events that led up to that video? Like, again, I remember, I think it was a tweet of yours that was written by someone at Fullscreen.
So there's specifically one day, it was right after Playlist Live 2018. I had just came back for that and I had a really hard time there and a lot of breakdowns, a lot of panic attacks. And I think I came home and that morning it was like 8 a.m., 9 a.m. started drinking and I broke. I just snapped and I turned on the camera and just like was just like venting and I posted it. And from there, I like, honestly, kind of like blacked out that day, like not from the drinking, but like from just like, it was just so much. And that's kind of when everyone, my family, friends, manager were like, we have to stop. Mm-hmm. And that was middle of tour. I think we canceled the rest of the dates. And that's when Fullscreen put that statement out. And I think I had someone come on, sign on my behalf and like write something. And then the only thing that after that was the video. But yeah, the build up to that was like, honestly, coming out video on.
All the way there.
So like, I think that was 4 months.
And at that time, when you canceled the rest of the tour dates, did you also have other brand deliverables and different types of things you had to do?
I think Buffer was like on, we were like, should we cancel my appearance or not? And I think it was just tour, I believe, but... Yeah, I think so.
I think it's incredible that, you know, you were very vulnerable during this time. I think there's probably some of that that, again, was very complex of like, is this content? Is this my experience? Mm-hmm. What is this? But I think even reflecting on it now and talking about it now, there's a lot of creators who are experiencing accelerated success today. Like what YouTube, TikTok is today versus what it was back then.
Yeah.
This type of like acceleration is happening a lot more often now. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like from, you know, that point to now, do you feel like you've done to have a healthier relationship with content, or do you feel like you have a healthier relationship?
Yeah, I honestly definitely do. I think the pandemic has helped. Right. It's kind of stopped everything, made everyone stop. And I think it made me reevaluate, made me think. I feel like I've grown a lot in the past like year and a half, 2 years. I almost don't recognize, you know, the person I was when the pandemic started. And I think it made me really think about what I want long-term. I guess I don't hold as closely as I did before. Like I don't, the numbers, I don't, it, how do I say this? It's not a representation of my value, I guess, you know? That's a hard thing to understand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a hard thing to grasp, especially when you're so in it. But over the past 2 years, I think I really have come to terms with that. And I think with all these other projects going on, I think I'm kind of taking a bit of a step back from YouTube. I feel like I saw David Dobrik talk about this. He's talked about like ending the vlogs, like over, because he's like, I want to end on a high.
Yeah.
Yep.
I kind of have that a bit where I'm like, I did what I needed to do. Like I accomplished what I set to do. And I feel like something that was happening with YouTube was that the burnout process for me was like, I'm like, I'm burning myself out because I've given my all
right
to it. So that's why with these, I think something else has helped with my mental health and my relationship with social media is starting fresh, you know, starting Twitch, podcasts, this short film. Like it's, you know, it's something new. I've been saying it reminds me of 2017. Like I'm getting back into it, starting from the ground up, and it's fun, it's exciting. And I think that was a big thing that I don't know.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's super healthy for a creative to have a start and an end date. Like with the independent short film that will have an end date.
Yeah.
And then you move on and that's great. With YouTube, you don't necessarily have that, but you can make the decision to have that. You can look at it like it's a show or like you're doing it as a season.
Yes.
Right. And that's a super important thing, I think, for creators to understand. And that some of the best shows in the history of like all media, all of them end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly.
People move on, they do different things.
I think it's all about the type of content, right? So you're highly edited content. That was almost inevitable that it needed to have an end because that is too much for you to pour yourself into on an indefinite basis.
Mm-hmm. Even more so.
Did you open it?
Yes.
Did you get it open?
I got it.
So I think what you're doing now with Twitch and podcasting, like even for us, we shifted to this format because we were like, okay, what could we do for the next 10 years?
Yeah.
We could have conversations with creators and creatives for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. I'm positive I can do that.
I didn't see anything else that we could do
right
for 10 years. I was just like, it's either that or it's something totally different. I don't
right
know.
Yeah.
But I think when we do put ourselves, like I think we both have visions of making a documentary one day. You know, and that's exciting because it's a project. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where creators need to evaluate, like if this requires a lot of me, I might want to have a start and an end date and communicate that to my audience, even if it's on YouTube, it's a season. I was just talking to a creator last week about this and he was like, he's releasing daily content right now and he's really kind of stressed about it. And he was like, I want to make these better, but I have to make something new every day. And I was like, well, why don't you just do like 6 weeks of content and call it a season and then stop and then reevaluate and do it again. I think the platforms are developing in that way where you can do that now. It's not what it was when Casey was daily vlogging. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you can have a different relationship. And I do think you can pick formats now. You can make money on Twitch.
Yeah.
You can go live. You did that, right? For the first time?
Yeah. Yes.
How was that? Because you are such an editor and storyteller. And in contrast, this is just like flip a camera on and BL.
Yeah. I think doing the podcast has been like also like tapping into something that I'm not used to. It's more about me as a character, me, my personality, just like my interest. And so going live, it was definitely interesting. I feel like I'm still, I have like my idea of like kind of where I want to head with Twitch and like where I'm putting my spin on it. And, I feel like Twitch is very personality based. It's like you just need to be yourself, you know? Mm. And so like having the graphics and like talking to my cousin who's done my graphics from the very start, he did my graphics for YouTube and stuff, you know, thinking about like what's something I haven't done before, you know? And so I definitely, I'm a structured person. With my videos, everything's structured. So with streaming, like I definitely had a structured list out. So, and even the podcast, like I have a laptop there and we have it all broken down. Like I have segments because there needs to be a beginning, middle, and end. There always has to be. Again, yesterday was my first time doing it. I go live every Monday and Wednesday. Wednesday, I'm doing it with my brother. So cool. I've been trying to bring a bit of YouTube into that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like something that did really well on YouTube was my dynamic with my brother. All my brother videos were the ones that did the best.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
When you publicly roasted him,
Yes.
Immediately after the production's done, cameras are off, is he like, hey, Elle, what the fuck was that? Or was he like,
I think it was, that was so awesome. It was so in the, like that time period was like, he got it. It was like, yeah, he was okay, a character. Yeah, he, it. Yeah.
He was along for the ride.
He was along for the ride and okay, he loved it. He yeah, he loved sure attention.
That's a great video though. Interesting. Yeah. That's cool. That you're bringing the characters from like the hit show that was, you know, Mills over to this new format. Mm-hmm. It's almost like how The Office now has these like sub podcasts with characters,
yes,
right? Where
it's like,
oh, now you can listen to their experience and now you can break off, you know.
So that's every Monday and Wednesday.
Yes, for now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there an end date on that or a season, or is it just like from starting right now, we'll just go and figure it out?
Yeah. I think, well, contractually, I have a year.
Okay,
but even that's great. It's it's peace of mind for a creator.
Yeah.
It's just like, all right, we have 1 year. I'm at least committing to that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And even with the podcast, podcasts are nice because there are seasons. I'm with Ramble and actually we have a season. So that's been nice too. It's like, cool. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I feel like the podcast can be something that goes on for a while. Twitch streaming, I think I'm just still figuring it out and feeling it out. I think it's just for me, the way I see it is that I really, then my next step is directing, writing and directing. Mm-hmm. I really feel very passionate about that. And I think it's a way for me to take what I have done on YouTube and kind of go to the next level with it.
Yeah.
And I can't really do YouTube, like be creating like content like that and be making short films like that at the same time. So, you know, I feel like Twitch and podcasts are like a way for me to express myself and get creative in a way that isn't as draining. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's just really cool and like new projects. So
And you can foster the community with the live streaming and with the podcast and then put all of your real hard creative energy into the independent film.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's the film about?
Well, it's a queer coming of age romance. I honestly, like I wrote it and I asked like my dream actors and they all said yes. Some of them have done Disney. Some of them have done like one of them, the love interest is Love Victor, Ava Capri.
Oh, wow.
So like the fact that all of them say yes, they're so talented. I've been feeling imposter syndrome because I feel like I'm the most inexperienced person on set, but it's been really cool. But someone said, it's like you're making your own gay Disney Channel original movie. I'm like, yeah, like a DCOM. Yeah. And I love it. Those are my comfort watches. And it's basically the film is like, the film I wish I had growing up. That John Hughes style inspiration's definitely in there. It's all going to be shot on film, super 16mm film. It's going to be like kind of Wes Anderson-esque with the blocking and everything. And I'm going to have like an orchestral score throughout, wall to wall. So it's going to be like kind of Marriage Story score, if you've ever heard that, Randy Newman. And it's been interesting because we did a table read and we screen recorded it. And I'm just so used to videos and I was just like, I don't know if this makes sense. So I have it actually like the film, like the score, because this is how I make YouTube videos is I always do the music first. Yeah. And so I put like the songs that I got, the score, and then like kind of pieced it together, edited it. I've had it like half edited just to see it like played out. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to feel better about it. I was like, okay, no, I got this.
The story makes sense.
Yes, cool. Exactly. Yeah, so it's been interesting. It's been like a learning experience for sure, but I'm really excited for it. I'm going to do like a festival run with it. So
I was going to ask that. Yeah. Do you know like where the film's going to come out?
I'm going to be submitting it to festivals in December. We'll see, fingers crossed, which ones it gets into. And then after that, I think I'm going to release it on YouTube.
Cool. And it's self-funded?
Yeah.
Is the story about you?
It's not about me. A lot of it's about growing up and like leaving your hometown. And so I think there's like parts of me in there. I think there's parts of me in every single character. I think I remember the main boy, like the child in it, is very, I think I wrote in the script, Ferris Bueller charm, like, and he kind of is that filmmaker. I think he kind of is that YouTube part of myself. And then the main character, Casey, is like that, like hometown, leaving your hometown for the first time, thinking like, can I make it? So just a little bit of everything. Yeah.
That's cool. So you've gone through a lot of public transformation. You recently said, although you came out as bisexual, you've recently come out as gay. You have gone through just a lot of iterations, I think, of Elle Mills publicly, which is natural for someone who's not filming themselves to go through those evolutions. But how does that feel to go through that public evolution, like to have people know your story without even meeting you, to have people be watching it and experiencing your transformation?
I mean, it's interesting. Because I really do feel like I'm coming into my own more and more so, and I still have a lot of growing to do. That's just life, I guess. But like, what I'm trying to learn is to not be ashamed of, because it's every my yeah, like from 2017 to now, like all of that's public, and I've changed so much from 2017. I've privated videos, like I'm embarrassed about some of the stuff I put out online. I guess I'm still very much in it. I'm very much of like not trying to be ashamed of who I was, because I've learned so much from then. But it's a very weird thing, you know? I feel like a lot, I talked to a lot of like kind of child actors on my podcast, and it's like interesting to see, like, I wasn't necessarily a child, but I was a teenager, and you know, growing in front of the public eye, it's like, I don't know, just a very weird thing that I'm still very much processing now, I guess.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, I missed it earlier on, but you kissed Corinna Kopp in one of your videos.
Yes.
Can we just talk through that experience?
Yeah, for sure. Like,
yeah, Corinna and how she played into that.
Yeah. So I had never really kissed anyone. And so this is post coming out video. Valentine's Day was coming up. I was like, I love romance movies. I love rom-coms. So I was just like, can make like a romance, like a little rom-com basically. And I was thinking about, like, who can I ask to be my first kiss? Corinna Kopp followed me after my coming out video. So we were mutuals. I never talked to her though. And my friend's like, you should ask Corinna Kopp. And I was like, okay. I didn't know she was saying, yes, she was dating Todd at the time too. Yeah. And so I DM'd her. I was like, hey, if I flew you to Canada this week, would you come and kiss me for my video? And she's like, yeah. And so we literally Amazing. 2 days after that, she flew out. I flew her to stay with me and my mom and my brother, and my brother's friends were like, it was actually really nice, because I was able to get them to work for me for free, because they all wanted to hang out with Corinna.
Yeah.
And so Corinna loves it. They were all like little puppy dogs around her. And so honestly, that's to date, I think that's one of my favorite videos I've ever made.
That's a fun video.
That was great. I like it a lot. And it was just like a fun experience, because also people were, because also at the time, also, I mean, David's still obviously, but at the time it was like huge, like that Corinna Kopp was in Ottawa, Canada. So we like, we would go to the mall. So we said we're going to be at the mall, and we shut down like the mall. Like, it was a, it was huge.
Wow.
It was crazy. And it was honestly like a really fun experience. And yeah, I remember being really nervous. I was shaky. I look back at that video very fondly. I always talk about it. I think it's my, actually, I think it's, I like it more than the coming out one. I go through my waves.
Yeah. I mean, that one is a masterclass in act one, act two, act three.
Oh yeah.
Like it
yeah.
is
yeah.
the
yeah,
perfect yeah, yeah. structure.
The payoff is so good. And like the way you filmed it in slow-mo with the, like the confetti going up.
Yeah.
Yeah. The payoff is so good in that. But it's interesting, because you're mirroring like movies from when we were younger. Like that's essentially like a condensed version of the film Never Been Kissed.
Oh yeah, yeah, yes.
You know, remember that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a condensed version of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that video is awesome. I love that video.
Thank you.
Asked Emma too, right? Wasn't Emma in the
video?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you asked
Emma. Oh yeah, yeah. That's interesting, because I think I with that, I worked backwards. I was like, okay, I think I would want like me to ask a couple of creators, and I asked Emma to send in a video, because I thought it'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. It was semi-acted where they're like, no, I'm busy.
Yeah,
I'm
doing this exactly.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was really fun. Cool. Amazing. So Elle, how do you want people to interact with Elle Mills today?
Like just personally, like
is it on YouTube? Is it on Twitter? Yeah. Like where do I get my fix of Elle Mills right now?
Twitch and my podcast. I post on Twitter and I think Instagram I'd probably post more often on. But I definitely think, you know, if people want to see me twitching the podcast.
Is that what it's called? People want to see me twitching.
Are you a Twitcher? Is that what's
streamer.
It called?
A streamer. Yeah, a streamer. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Twitch.tv/Elle Mills. And then cool. The podcast, Crazy Stupid Fangirls. And then soon, hopefully you'll be seeing me making films and stuff. So
amazing. Cool.
That's the dream.
I have one last question for you, which is, you know, during those dark times, when you look back on that now, if there are other creators who are experiencing that, like what is your advice?
I'm still very much in like the world, and I, you know, I'm friends with a lot of creators who kind of got their success like after 2018, after that time. And again, it's a hard thing to really do, but I really think dissociating yourself from the numbers and not putting your value on that, and relieving that pressure, I think, in any way that they can. I think understanding that it isn't everything. The thing is, I'm saying this, it's so hard to really understand, but just like, I think looking bigger picture, a video not doing well isn't the end of the world. It really isn't. And if the numbers start going down, it isn't the end of the world. It really isn't. There's so much more to life than just that. I know it, there's that pressure and like that thing I was talking about earlier, like you have it now, you're so scared of losing it, but it's like, just enjoy it. Because there's an end to everything. No matter what, it's going to end. Well, I don't know. Some people will get it lucky, but I mean, for the most part, like, you know, there's so many people that jump to success and then it's waves, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just...
It's ebbs and flows.
Ebbs and flows, and absolutely.
It actually is guaranteed that it's ebbs and flows. And I think that's the interesting part, is that you have to go into any career being like, I know for a fact it's going to go up and it's going to go down. That's guaranteed.
Even for creators at the very top where you think they're always going to be at that level.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that. Okay, cool. Al, cool. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it, guys.
Do you have any questions for us?